Hey chat. So the last 2 weeks have been pretty rough. I've been in the emergency room three times, and then last night they did a procedure, and they're kept me overnight. I might be here an additional day, I'm not sure. Down the road I'm gonna have to have yet another procedure. I'm not actually like sick or anything, it's kidney stones. However, three ER trips and two procedures, wouldn't call them operations, this is gonna be pretty tough on me. But luckily, I did have my awesome wife bring my laptop, so the content will keep flowing. Yay. I kinda have to, I have no choice. I upload every single day. If I don't upload, then, I don't make anything. Now, I'm not an idiot. I know times are tough, for everybody. The January jobs report was the worst January jobs report since 2009. It's bad out there. If you want to help, there's two things. Number one, just please be a subscriber. Half of you are, half of you aren't. Being a subscriber makes the channel grow, helps me make additional income better than anything else, and it's totally free. So if you watch this stuff, if it makes you laugh, if it makes you learn, or whatever, please subscribe. Now would be a good time. I'm also going to, for 48 hours, put a 30% discount on my entire store, and that's for if you've been wanting to get a book or something, but they're just kind of expensive and times are tough. 30%'s the most I can do, but that's for if you want to help or if you wanted to do that and you just haven't been able to, then if I'm gonna ask something of my viewers, then I should do something in return. All that stuff's in the link. I'll be okay. Like I said, times are gonna be a little tough. I'm still not gonna miss a day. You're gonna see a video every day. So anyways, thank you.
Why don't you think the Big Bang is a fact?
Yeah, so would you agree that for something to be a fact, it has to be 100% proven or
No,
just
a
100%?
fact is just something that is known to be true.
Yeah, but it's not 100%, so it's not known to be true. For something to be true, it has to be 100%.
No, it does not.
Tell me something that is true that's not 100% true.
Like literally any provincial empirical knowledge fits that case. I don't like, do you know what the words fact and knowledge and true mean?
Yeah.
What is a fact?
For something to be true.
Something that is known to be true. What does it mean to know something?
To know something, I guess to acknowledge something that is true.
Well, a lot of people go with a justified true belief. That's what knowledge is. So how do I know it? Because I have a justification and that it's true. And true is that which corresponds to reality.
So you're
So
saying, okay, so you're saying it's a fact because you think it's justified by all the observations that we have currently made.
yeah, like an incredible amount of evidence. So like the Earth goes around the sun, that is scientifically
Yeah.
demonstrable with models. You can construct models that can technically like prove it the other way around, but the overwhelming amount of evidence that's much simpler, that goes the other direction counts as empirical weight against the alternative idea. So it makes the much more elegant and simple and parsimonious idea that the Earth goes around the sun the more factual one. So this is just how this is the nature of scientific knowledge. It really can't be any other way.
But the Big Bang theory also like requires things that don't necessarily that haven't been proven or haven't been observed, like dark matter and stuff like that. So how can you you know, fall in line with this.
We know that dark matter exists. And we just don't know its composition.
We don't know that it exists. Has it been?
Yeah, we do.
Prove it.
Sure. Galaxies rotate way too fast in order for the observable matter to create enough gravitational energy to bind them. So something is creating vastly
something,
more.
But you don't know the properties of something. You can't
say
it's dark matter.
That's why it's called dark matter. That's the placeholder. But yeah,
exactly.
For
but
what
you don't know what it does.
Yeah, that's the buddy. Like 100. Well, I don't know about 100. 500 years ago, we knew that lightning existed, but we didn't know why lightning existed. Mm-hmm. But in order for you to remain consistent, for you to teleport back 500 years, you'd have to be like, no, you guys don't know that lightning even exists. I'm like, what?
Yeah, so you're saying there's something there, but you can't observe it. You can't, demonstrate it in a laboratory. It is there, but you can't like really do anything with it.
It doesn't work at scales that you could ever observe in a lab, you know, like a hurricane. We can't make hurricanes in labs, in labs either. But for dark matter, dark matter is more of what we observe is the effects of dark matter. It's just, it's very plain. We know the observable matter can't account for it. But dark matter, whatever it is, has these very weird properties. It won't interact with electromagnetic radiation, which is really inconvenient. But we know what it's doing. So,
I mean, okay, cool. And then how would you also explain like galaxy formation that is like very early on, like I think a couple hundred million years after the Big Bang? Like, why is it too complex? So would that be because like we don't? Why?
Because before the James Webb Space Telescope was ever built, we already knew about galaxies that were like 400 million years after the Big Bang. Mm-hmm. James Webb has found some that are 300 million years after the Big Bang. That breaks the previous record by less than 1%. It's just in terms of the history of the universe going backwards. Now, if you want to do it the other way, going forward, then it breaks the record by 25% or whatever. But they actually do fit with our galaxy formation models. They were kind of on the edge of the error bars, but we didn't have good data on stellar mass indexes for new galaxies, first of all. So the galaxies looked a lot bigger than they were, which was actually not necessarily true, because these early galaxies are almost certainly just made of a lot more big stars. And the thing with stars is the brightness of stars increases by a power law, not linearly. So a galaxy that's the same mass as another one, but all of its stars are big blue stars rather than medium mass like white stars. The other one, although it's the exact same mass, because it's made of the different kind of stars, will glow exponentially brighter. Not necessarily exponentially, but it'll be a power law brighter. You would expect it to be equal, but it's not. It has fewer stars, but they're the bigger type, and the mass is equal. It will be way brighter. So there's that part of it. The other part of it, the galaxies aren't as big as we thought they were. It almost certainly is one thing. But as far as the formation, the early universe was a lot more dense and clustered. Matter was more clustered together. So galaxy and star formation actually occurs at a faster rate. This is kind of like if you, you know, like what a pressure cooker is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or, I mean, probably a more appropriate example is just like in chemistry, you learn if you want to, like if you take gases or even things in liquids, if you want to force the chemicals to react together faster, what you do is you increase the pressure, because that increases the rate of collisions and all these other things. Something analogous like that would have been going on in the early universe too. So these new galaxies really, they really aren't a problem.
Okay, and when you say like a dense hot mass, are you saying that it was infinitely dense, or are you just saying that, you know, it's dense in just like the general sense?
No, just vastly more dense than today. Like in that early part of the universe, like 300 million mm-hmm. years after, the observable universe was only, I think it's 2.7 billion light years across, I believe. I didn't do the calculations. I had a computer do some calculations on this for me. I think that's the number. I may be off, but regardless, all the matter we see in the expanding universe very early on in the universe was much closer together.
Okay. And I guess my biggest issue with the whole thing is, like, how does it start? I mean, I understand people say, like, quantum fluctuations, this and that. Like, we can't really, I guess, determine a specific cause. It just, you know, happened because we know the universe is expanding and stuff like that. But, I mean, like I said, that's my main issue. Like, what caused that? You could say quantum fluctuations, but what does that necessarily even mean?
Well, I mean, a physicist could tell you what those mm-hmm. are. It has to do with virtual particles, and they borrow energy from each other in a weird way. I don't remember the details. And even if I could read a paragraph about it to you right now, but I would understand maybe 5% of it. So that wouldn't be super
mm-hmm.
helpful anyways. But there are like scientists that do know about this.
Oh, I understand. Oh, they know about quantum fluctuations, but
yes.
I feel like they'd have to assume a lot of things when they're applying that to, like, you know, the early universe and saying, okay, so this happened and then this happened. Like,
yeah.
So why out of nowhere, like at a certain point in time, did it just happen?
Yeah. I mean, at all points in history, we've been at the frontier of where, like, right at the edge of what we don't know about mm-hmm. nature and science. And our track record so far has been in uncovering those things. Now this one, it seems kind of hopeless because we're talking about conditions that are going to be before the structure of the universe as we see it exists. And mm-hmm. man, are we ever going to have that?
I mean, I don't think it so.
Maybe not. It kind of sucks, but you know, we should definitely keep trying.
Yeah, I understand that. Like, it's going to be very hard. I mean, obviously we weren't there. It's going to be like a very hard thing to observe. I don't know. I feel like it would uncover a lot of things if we actually knew, like, what actually transpired back then. But, yeah, like, I feel like it'd be very hard to determine.
Yeah, maybe impossible, unfortunately.
All right. And, yeah, my other thing was that the Earth is 100% flat.
Well, yeah.
No, I'm just joking.
Okay.
I thank you for the clarification. Have a good one.
Evolution requires faith. I don't really see it that way. I think there are obviously some things we assume going into it, but then we look for evidence.
Mm-hmm. Like, you mean assuming a biogenesis?
That doesn't even need to be the case for evolution to be true.
No, that's what I mean. Like, that the assumption that is kind of a prerequisite.
No, it's not a prerequisite. Like, the first life form on the planet could have been created by aliens or God, for all I care. Evolution would still be true if that happened.
What would you say if someone said we're missing billions of transitional fossil records?
I mean, that's true. I mean, it's more than billions. It's true. Well, it would depend on how many species there are, which, so I don't know, I guess billions maybe is an okay number, but we literally only need to find one in order to have evidence that transitions occur.
Yeah, but if we have one fossil record of a species that looks like a prerequisite of another species, then you're just assuming that there is evolution.
No.
It's still an assumption.
No, that's evidence. If I say, like, apply this to forensics, I accuse blank of being the murderer. Then I go out and I do an investigation and I find their DNA at the crime scene. You can't turn around and say, yeah, but you're just assuming they did it. No, I assumed there would be evidence when I assumed they did it. Now I have evidence that they did it. And so with the fossil record or genetics or whatever, those things were predicted. So when we find them, we're finding evidence. We're not, it's not circular reasoning. It's not just another assumption.
Yeah, I don't know. And I'm not saying that it's totally false. I'm just saying that a lot of it is requires faith, just like believing in a higher power.
I wouldn't say it's just like that at all, because whatever kinds of ideas you, like axioms or whatever you start from when you do science, you can at least participate in a system where you can experience what you're presuming. Whereas in the religious sense, you can't ever hope to do that at all. The kind of faith isn't even that you have to have for religious thinking or whatever, isn't experiential even in principle.
Well, maybe not on like a general consensus scale, but I think religion is very experienceable.
So is it testable and repeatable?
Yeah, I think you could have, there's plenty of proof that suggests that there's life continues after death.
Like
how many people have near-death experiences, have come back from being pronounced dead and say, hey, I saw this bright light.
Is that what the afterlife is, a bright light?
I'm just giving you an example of what people say when they come back from death.
Yeah, I've heard that before, but when did we ever go to the afterlife and then collect data about what the afterlife is like? And then use that data to compare to near-death experiences. That's never happened.
I mean, that's a great point. I think the most accomplished neurosurgeons in the world have been trying to find where consciousness is derived from in the human brain. But we know consciousness exists.
Yeah,
that's very similar.
Yeah, I don't know what that has to do with anything, really.
Well, it's like, how can you, like, engineer consciousness on an AI? You really can't.
We don't know how to do that.
So we know consciousness exists, but
we don't have a very good way of testing, or like confirming the consciousness, because. Your consciousness is inaccessible to me. I can't prove that you even have it, in the sense where, like, I can know you have it in the same way that I know I have it. We can collect evidence. We can do a Turing test, right? What's really unfortunate is right now, AIs can basically do, they can pass pretty much any test. For that, you know, I can't tell the difference necessarily between chatting with somebody I've never met before online versus talking back and forth with ChatGPT, right? It's kind of indistinguishable. It does have its own way of doing language that, because I've used it a lot, gives it away for me at least. But yeah, I don't think that AI is conscious, but I don't know what else it could do. I mean, I feel like we'd have to build an anthropomorphic or whatever robot that has that built into it that can walk around, and like it would have to express emotions for me to be convinced, basically, because that's what humans do. But I actually don't see how a computer that's just Searle's Chinese Room could also, I don't see why that couldn't also just do that. So then, now I don't know.
I think that's what the whole AGI initiative is. The artificial general intelligence, where AI comes up with new original ideas and thoughts.
Yeah, that would be good. And then at that point,
I don't think that'll ever exist. That's my claim.
Geez, why not?
Well, I don't think that there's a way to measure, re-engineer, or reverse engineer consciousness. I think that it's in a way, it's spiritual, it's metaphysical.
Then why don't you doubt that you have it?
What's that?
Then why don't you doubt that you're conscious?
Well, I know I'm conscious because I experience it. And
sure. But then why shouldn't I doubt that you're conscious?
Well, you can, but I hope you experience it as well.
Yeah, it's just I don't see what, like, based on what you've said so far, I don't know what you could possibly levy against the robot that you can't also levy against me, unless you're going to say, well, but you're a human and so am I. But then you're saying, well, okay, then you're just giving a physicalist origin for consciousness. You'd have to be an organism with a brain to have it. And silica just can't do that for whatever reason. And then it's like, silicon. Yeah. Well then all the stuff you said about it being metaphysical and spiritual, certainly spiritual, actually kind of blows up.
Why is that?
Because you're basically giving a substrate dependent argument.
What do you mean by that?
So like, you don't doubt that I'm conscious, but you haven't explained how consciousness arises in you, but you can't doubt that you have it. I agree. That's how I feel too. And the reason I think that you have it too is because you're just like me. But I don't mean because you're a spirit, because you're not. You're a human being like I'm. You're an organism with a brain. I also don't doubt that dead people don't have conscious experiences. I don't doubt that unicellular organisms or organisms without nervous systems, I pretty much don't think they have conscious experiences at all. Maybe like a tiny, like a tiny bit of one. But there's no, I can't use any of that. So when you say that the robot just simply can't be conscious, but you don't have that skepticism when you look at me, the reason you have the skepticism is something about composition. You just think because it's not an organism, it can't have it, but I can. Well, then your basis for consciousness resides in the physical arrangement of, like, what an organism is. So that's, when I say substrate dependent, I mean consciousness is dependent on a physical, like, medium or whatever. We would call that a substrate.
I think even if artificial intelligence were to develop a consciousness, I don't think it would be through natural processes. I think it would be through engineering and extremely articulate and brilliant people. So I think that would just be more of a argument for an intelligent design. You wouldn't attribute a quantum computer to natural processes in the same way you wouldn't attribute microbiology that's much more complex to natural processes. Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
I don't understand where intelligent design comes into this, but why would I not attribute natural causes to a quantum computer? Quantum mechanics is a totally physicalist idea. There aren't any non-physicalist scientific ideas.
What I'm saying is it requires intelligent design to engineer and to facilitate all the different materials and minerals.
Yeah, but that doesn't leave any room for even if I grant that, that doesn't leave any room for like God to enter the equation, because everything we know about things that are designed is that they're designed unmiraculously, completely materialistically. That's not how God operates. We don't know how a God does anything.
Well, I think what you just described is how God operates.
Materialistically? Physically?
I mean, that's we're material beings.
Yeah, but presumably the spark, the breath of life, the spark of consciousness, whatever, in the theistic worldview is literally something that is not material. It's mediated through some kind of spirit or soul.
Well,
which,
what do they say?
Which doesn't have any properties that can actually be known.
Hey, I'm getting a call from work. I have to go, but
that's fine.
I'll follow you. It was a pleasure meeting you.
Yeah, no problem.